I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are here to talk about the homeopathic healing of allergies and food sensitivities. We honestly, they're not exactly the same pattern, but there are some overlaps, which is why we decided to go ahead and put them together just in the interest of, well, honestly, in the interest of your time. So we don't have 10,000 episodes about all of this, but there are enough overlaps, and one in particularly challenging overlap that the two of them share, that I thought it was just best to talk about them together. So we're going to talk both about food. We'll talk about food allergies, like a true allergy, food sensitivities, and then like environmental and contact allergies, because they're like, again, some overlaps that we're going to see. So Jody, before we start on like the things that we would expect to see on the healing pattern or healing trajectory, let's start with how it showed up in your life and in your PANS and MCAS experience, because that's what we definitely need to touch on MCAS here, since it's a big factor in your younger daughter who has MCAS, so the mast cell activation syndrome. Foods are a big factor, and environmental allergies as well.
So this was like literally from the beginning of Avery's life. You know, she was born with a pretty extreme dairy sensitivity.
You mean Gwen? Avery or Gwen? You said it was...
No, Avery.
Avery too.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it is, as far as my mom life goes, it was literally from the moment I was a mom. Like, because Avery was born with the dairy sensitivity. That was with her. So she was non-dairy forever. And then G was born and she was allergic to literally everything, all food, everything I was eating, she was reacting to, like everything. It was absolute insanity. And was process of like years and years and years of figuring out. In that meantime, we're living in a house with mold, and Avery gets illnesses, her little cascade into PANS happens. And then it's like, wait, it seems like she's reacting to other foods now. So we have her allergy tested, and she tested like truly allergic to gluten and soy and a couple of different fruits. And I think actually, I can't remember if dairy actually showed up as an allergen at that time, but then it was like, she's never been allergic to these things before. Like, what the heck is going on? So we had this like blend of she's got a sensitivity, but now all of a sudden she has these true allergies. And then G was over here being allergic to literally the entire world, including every single food. So it was just like this like chaotic, what the crud is going on with my kids type thing. So it was just... all of that was like exploding at one time.
Mm-hmm. And then you also had a lot of the food allergies, you had the environmental stuff too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like with both of them, especially G. She couldn't go outside without having a pretty significant mast cell reaction. She couldn't be around no chemicals, no fragrances. She could not leave our house for, I don't know, like for sure 2 years, but it was spotty into the third year. Like nowhere, like no grocery store, no restaurant, no nothing, because she would, and nothing could come into our home. Like I was cooking in my garage, so she wouldn't have reactions to airborne food. It was a whole level of insanity.
Yeah. So not everybody's going to have things as intense as you did. You know, one reason that you and I do this is because I do remember that when you and I first started working together, specifically for Gwen, I was shocked at the amount of effort you put into figuring out all of these very different things that were affecting her and the lengths you went to find something, the like one specific thing that she could have, or, you know, all of that. And I was like, well, if this mom can figure this type of stuff out, she can figure almost anything out. And so we need to be able to talk through and help people understand when they're facing these challenges that feel insurmountable, how you manage to do that, right? And so not everybody's going to have the same level of sensitivity and reactivity. And homeopathy can still help. I'm going to go ahead and do a quick spoiler alert just so people will understand where are your kids at with these things now.
So Avery is now eating all of the foods that she was either sensitive or allergic to, including dairy, which she had never. In the beginning, it took me, I was scared. I was very scared to do all that. But then slowly over time, I was like, oh, okay. She had, you know, we went to a birthday party and she had a cupcake and she's okay. Like no reactions to the food dye. She didn't, you know, there was no candida issues, which had always been a huge problem. She just didn't see it. And over time, slowly but surely, I was like, okay, she can eat it. And
we'll go over the specific, we'll go over some of the stuff in the slowly but surely and like the process for what it looks like here in a minute. But I wanted to make sure we had the spoiler alert that it is possible that you can get to the place that these things that you were never able to eat, that you can safely eat without having a flare or a reaction or anything like that. Stick with it as we're talking through this, because it's not a, oh, it's, you know, we still need to avoid this all the time and we're, you know, whatever, or a mild infraction is not a big deal. It's like, no, eating those things legitimately frequently and being just fine. So this is what, but it's a process. And so that's what we're going to go into now is the process.
And I love your spoiler alert because we don't know this. Like I had no idea that I had no idea that it was possible to do something to help my child no longer be allergic to a food. Like I had no idea we had the ability to do that. And I don't think a lot of people do, because whenever I talk to people about food allergens now, they're like, wait, what are you talking about? You can like change how the immune system's working. Like, why has nobody ever told me that before? Why are you the first person saying this? So I think that's such a huge, important thing to share.
Right. So there's a couple of things that we need to just really get our brains wrapped around. So the immune system has to be sensitized to things to see them as allergies. And allergies themselves, just like PANS, is a misdirected or atypical immune response. So are allergies. Again, just like strep is not the problem, it is the trigger. It is not the thing though, right? It is so because if strep was the problem, it would cause the same thing in everybody rather than causing the typical presentation, which is the sore throat and the fever and all those things, right? So same thing with allergies. Your immune system has become upregulated to see this thing that most bodies see as innocuous, non-problematic, or if anything, like mildly problematic, and it takes care of it. It doesn't create like this big overwhelming response. Your immune system is having an atypical response to it. And so we can adjust with homeopathy. We can shift the way that the immune system works. Also, it's important to remember that antibodies and all these things that are telling the immune system that this is a problem, they don't live forever. You know, that's why we have to, you know, for people who vaccinate, that's why you have to get boosters, because the antibodies do not live forever in they have a lifespan. And so we can help the body have a more typical response and not have the production of these antibodies to things that don't necessarily have to be problematic and that aren't problematic for most people, right? And so it's just about nudging the body and stimulating it to heal. One of the things that can be important in the early stages of healing with homeopathy to heal food sensitivities, allergies, et cetera, is to have avoidance for a period of time. And that is partially so that we can allow those antibodies the opportunity to move through, die off, and clear out, right? So that we are not always having constant re-exposure and having more of that production while the body is still trying to heal. Because if we've got something like a soldier, you know, the antibodies, we've got a couple of different antibodies. They're the most prominent ones that we're looking at when it comes to food allergies and food sensitivities, which maybe should pause there first and differentiate. So a food allergy is like an anaphylactic allergy. This is an IgE rapid response. So IgE is like seconds to minutes that we're going to see a reaction time. And it's going to be more systemic. That's where we're going to have like the no peanuts allowed on the plane because somebody can stop breathing if they get exposed to it. And like what you were experiencing with Gwen earlier, where even like the particles in the air, like the level of sensitivity, and hers wasn't necessarily an IgE. It was more of a, like the way it was causing mast cell degranulation and the systemic impacts from that. IgG is what a lot of food allergy tests are looking for. That is a slow antibody. So that's a days to weeks. And that is still problematic, because what that's going to do, though, is that's where we see more of the like systemic inflammation buildup rather than like the fast, I can't breathe, tongue swelling response. And then we've got some tests that are going to be looking at things like IgA, and that's more gut specific, not more systemic. It's more like a gut specific antigen. And so what we're looking at with these different things is they're essentially guards to try to say, oh, you don't belong here, and now we're going to fight. And so having avoidance for a period of time, short period of time, so that we can have essentially a washout, let all the guards leave our body so that it's not immediately activating an immune response when they come in, and giving the body time to heal. So we've got the inflammation, the response coming in from these allergens or food sensitivities. Give it time for the inflammation that from the most recent exposure to calm down. Allow the antibodies that have been produced to move through their life cycle and clear out, and allow the body to heal so that we're having more appropriate immune responses. This is not really going to be a fast, sudden, overnight, you go from your kid can't have gluten or dairy to now your kid can handle it just fine. This is not something where we are going to be able to just know when your kid is going to be fine with those things either, right? So what we have to do when we're dealing with foods in particular is we're going to see times where we have to say, all right, we're doing well, things that we're seeing a lot better responses to potentially environmental allergens. And I'll shift to focus a little bit more on environmental allergens because they're often less controllable, but we're going to see that they're responding better. They're getting more typical immune response to things. We're seeing less of the misdirected type of flare response. And so maybe it's time to start testing these foods out. And so this is the hardest part for so many parents when it comes to foods. I will throw in the caveat before I hand it over to you to talk a little bit about your experience when I've had those conversations with you. True food allergies, IgE allergies, is not something that you should reintroduce without having your allergist on board and having a very clear plan for what you will do should your body not actually be at the place that it's ready to handle it. I have seen food allergies. I'm not a fan personally. I am very, very, very cautious. I would prefer to just say, we're just going to avoid these forever. And I've had some parents who are like, no, I just don't want to have this be a concern. And I don't want to be afraid of accidental exposure. So I would rather have a controlled testing and reintroduction. And so I have seen it. Reluctantly participated in some of these cases where we have seen true food allergies recover with homeopathy. And do not try to do this without a very clear rescue plan and participation with your allergist to make sure that you will be safe should things just not, your body just not be ready for it yet. Okay. So that's my one caveat. Let's talk a little bit about those times that I've had to have conversations with you about, well, Jody, we're not going to know how we're doing until and unless we provoke her body with some of these foods that she's been sensitive to.
You've literally been having this conversation with me over and over again since probably 2019, and you're literally still having it with me today. And I think one of the coolest, I call them homeopathy flexes. It's where homeopathy does this thing where it's like, whoa, like that was insane. I think one of the biggest homeopathy flexes I've ever seen is at one point when you're like, okay, we need to test a food on Gwen and see how she's doing. What, like, pick a food. And the thing that I picked was bananas because she had had bananas for a while. She was having a little bit more struggle in general when she was eating the bananas, but then at some point it became very obvious that she was reacting to them and it was really causing more problems than it was worth keeping them. So I pulled them and she missed bananas so much. She asked for bananas for so long. And so I'm like, all right, bananas is it. It's what she wants. If I'm not mistaken, bananas is a higher histamine food. But I was like, this is the one thing that she wants. And so we were like, all right, let's go. Let's start feeding her bananas, which I did, small amounts. And I remember that whenever I did feed her bananas, she was starting to have some reactions. Like I would see an uptick in her ADHD behavior. I don't even remember what all it was back then, but I remember I'm like, oh shoot, like reaction, pull back, stop. I have to stop this food. And you kept reminding me that the symptoms that I was seeing, the reaction symptoms, were going to help you with remedy selection. And that all we had to do was just keep going. I was going to continue giving her this low, like literally like a bite or two of banana a day. We're going to use the remedy and see if we can get her over this hump. And it's literally exactly what we did. I kept feeding the banana. I kept giving her doses. It took some persistence to get through, but eventually it's like we got outside of it and she was perfectly fine with it. She eats a relatively potentially unhealthy amount of bananas and she doesn't have any reaction whatsoever to them. She is totally fine with them. And it's just so wild to me that all we had to do was give her the banana so you could see the symptoms and get her on a remedy that was addressing all of the things, like the whole reason why her immune system was seeing a banana as a threat. And then eventually her immune system just stopped reacting to it.
Right.
And it's fine now.
Yeah. And so this is one of the things that can be hard to wrap your head around is that when you are having full avoidance of something, we don't know what remaining susceptibility there is when the body sees this thing that it currently feels is a threat that shouldn't be a threat. And so we do have to reintroduce things and we have to be willing to have some discomfort. And it does not mean stop, this is still really bad. It means, okay, as long as it's safe. And this is again where food sensitivities, where we're having maybe an uptick in behaviors, where maybe having, she would occasionally have some mild respiratory symptoms, but that it was manageable. It was not, you know, an emergency level, that this was something that we needed that information to see how her body was reacting and to see if anything had changed. Because yes, we can go and we do when we know that there's food sensitivities or food allergies or environmental allergies, we do go on the reactions that are known as part of our selection for a remedy. But things shift and change over time. The ways that we react to things shift and change. And so we don't know if that has happened with the remedy beneath the surface until we challenge it. Occasionally, we do reach the point where we have a reintroduction of food and it's just not a problem. And we don't have new symptoms that we're having to track and evaluate. But it's more often that you see a little bit. You're like, oh, we had this and there was a little bit of something, but it's not as bad as it used to be. That's usually what we see. If we've done a period of avoidance and then have had some notable progress in the totality of the case, and then we reintroduce foods. It's usually that we see some symptoms to a lesser degree than it happened before, far more manageable, so that we can continue to have some exposure on a regular, consistent basis so that we can then see the symptoms and address them, make sure that the remedy that they're on is addressing them. And sometimes you can do a start and stop, which we did a couple of times, where it's just not worth it big picture and you're worried about like the building over time, especially if it's an IgG situation where it's like a days to weeks time frame, not a minutes to, you know, seconds to minutes time frame. And so that's understandable if you want to take breaks. It just potentially prolongs it a little bit because you're going to have to keep doing the start and stop and checking again. So it's something to just work with your provider on to see what works for your family and what works for you, what you can tolerate, and just how your overall case is going, to really give some guidance on that. One of the things that I think is vital to share about this whole thing with foods, because some people are just like, well, what's the big deal? We're so used to it. We can just stay gluten and dairy free forever. It's not a big deal. And yeah, it might not be a big deal right now, but ask yourself how old your kid is and what level of control you're going to have. So Jody, I'd like to hear about your experience with those conversations that we have had and how true they might have been when I said, hey, Jody, what's going to happen when she's in middle school and you have less control? And
we have arrived and I am at the place of less control. So first off, I'm going to acknowledge that my decisions and my way that I've moved through this clearly was impacted by my own post-traumatic stress. My entire life, or my entire world in her life, has revolved around controlling all of these things to keep her safe and keep her out of the hospital and keep her off of, you know, the rescue meds and all of those type things. And so it has taken me much, much longer than not necessarily that it should have. I didn't quite understand this. I didn't grasp it, that there was going to come a day where she was going to start eating foods that she shouldn't and things were going to be hard. I wish I would have pushed harder with food trials in the past, but I did not because I was so scared. And I just wanted to, I'm fearful. I still am. I'm fearful of not being able to maintain the level of normalcy that she has now because of reactions. However, she is old enough to make decisions independent of me now, which she has been. And it is way more problematic now. It is very difficult. We have, you know, and it's not just that. It's the fact that she's in middle school. Chemicals, fragrances are still an issue. Like, we're literally using homeopathy to try and not, I know desensitize isn't the right word, but to try and, like, a middle school girl's locker room is off the hook. So we have that going on right now, which is, you know, filling her bucket up a little bit. But then she is opting to eat foods that are quite possibly the worst food she could, like a Nerd gummy cluster. And she is having pretty, I say significant. It's so hard though, because like all of her stuff used to be scary, life-threatening, going into the hospital. None of that's happening anymore. She's having very strong ADHD responses, behavioral responses. She's now having tics. And I don't have control of that anymore. And now she's in a moment where she's like very clear on it. And she's like, I'm not going to do it anymore. I understand how it's impacting everything. But I realize that's only a matter of time. And so with homeopathy, it's become very, very difficult for me to tell what's going on, because we'll kind of get things evened out and then she would eat something and it's like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what's going on anymore. It's just really hard. I now understand how it would have been a lot easier had I had been trialing food all along, and again, slowly, at a comfortable speed. But this is hard what we're doing right now. Because it's out of control.
Yeah. And so it's going to happen. I've said this to everybody along the way who I start with younger kids. You want to address this while you still have control rather than maintaining that control as long as you possibly can, because it will change. And the longer there's a super restrictive diet, the more likely they're going to go cuckoo bananas with eating all of the things they've never been allowed to eat when they have some more autonomy and that they have a life that's separate from you and you're not there to always watch. So even younger kids, if you don't have a house completely clear of stuff, if you've got things that other people are safe to eat, they're going to start stealing those things and hiding them in their room. So it's a really good thing for when you have the capacity to have some amount of control to start the reintroductions on the earlier side, to not put it off later. Because then what you happen, let's shift gears a little bit over into more the environmental allergies. Then you end up in the space right now that you're in that is more like the environmental allergies, where you have very little control over the frequent exposure to things. And so you're going to have ups and downs, and it's going to be, okay, was this blowing around in the air? Is this time of year is just going to be a tougher time of year because the immune system is more activated. And so we're getting like the immune activation that then is misdirected and like attacking the nervous system. And so we do see this heal. It just tends to take longer. We have rougher patches when we're going through an allergy season patch. Sometimes using allergy meds, over-the-counter allergy meds, can give some relief to help get through those tougher spots. But it definitely can create more chaos when you're not using them. So strategic use of medications or supplements for calming down those reactions when you are not able to avoid them can sometimes help to give the body a break, again, so that the immune system can go through its lifespan, its life cycle, and we can be stimulating healing in a lower activated state to not have as much that we're working against, to then have a better likelihood of a more typical immune response the next time around. Allergies do have a tendency to have to be part of the pendulum swing, and this can could potentially happen. It's less likely with food sensitivities, food allergies. It's hard to get worse than what a food allergy, a true food allergy, is. But we can have the food sensitivities. It's possible, though. I don't really see this as often. I think in part because we have more ability to control what we're eating than what we're breathing, or what we're touching to some degree. We have more control as well. So it's mostly the breathing, the inhalant allergies that we have very little control over. And what we do tend to see is what we call the pendulum swing, where the allergies almost seem to get worse as the PANS is starting to improve. And what we're seeing is that we go from a strong, misdirected and atypical immune response to a strong, more typical, more expected immune response, but overactive. Like, it's like the immune system's like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to get it right. Let's do it all the time. And so we tend to see that as we're healing, we have the worst cold and flu season we've ever had. And we also, if we're an allergy person, we have the worst allergy season that we've ever had. There are some kids who allergies are some of their biggest triggers or some of their for flares. And so we do see the pendulum swing with more of the inhalant allergies, and then it will start to settle down. It's a blessing in disguise because we get the opportunity to see what this still overactive and atypical immune response is, but more typical immune response. So allergies are more typical than PANS, but they're still atypical, right? They're still, not everybody has them, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think thinking about Avery's kind of journey through her outdoor seasonal allergies before we got to, because this was always even kind of a problem before PANS showed up in her world, but then PANS happened and it got worse. And, you know, we showed up to homeopathy and it's such a problem. And I was like, just absolutely so frustrated with it during the healing journey, because we kind of would get figured out and we would get okay. And then, you know, we're in Texas, so mold goes crazy, you know, anytime we get any rain or cedar allergies. And it was very, very frustrating for me. Like the first couple of times we either went through high mold or we went through a cedar season, and it's like, oh, here we go again. Avery's a mess and it's making PANS symptoms worse and it's crazy. But then each one of those seasons or events that went by, it seems like she had a little bit less. Like I was having to do less nose spray. I was having to do less allergy medicines. I was and we were, you know, somewhere along the way, I kicked into doing acute appointments, and acute appointments were helping with that type stuff. Or maybe not acute appointments. I'm saying the wrong thing, because acute appointments wouldn't be the allergies, but like literally it was like hurt.
If you're having like a really bad allergy attack.
Yeah. I just remember they were really, really bad. And then they started to improve again. And then she had her last hurrah. And during her last hurrah, I remember there was a cedar season that was horrible. Like she was a mess, ended up with full sinus infection, all the like ear infection, all the things. But then she got like at the very end of her healing journey. And it's so weird to me now, because I will be struggling significantly with a thing that Avery would have struggled with in the past. And she doesn't. It's just not. I mean, sometimes she gets watery, itchy eyes. Every once in a while, she gets a little congested, which I feel like is a very healthy immune response. All of the things that used to happen, the cascade into PANS and even the like sinus infections and ear infections, that stuff doesn't happen anymore. Her immune system just doesn't see those things as a threat anymore. It's really cool.
Yeah. And as somebody who's not, I'm not an allergy person, don't have allergies. It doesn't mean that you're never going to have something like, we're at the time that we're recording this, coming at the tail end of having had some Santa Ana winds here in Southern California. So the winds are blowing in all sorts of stuff. And so when you get something in your nasal passageways, you're going to sneeze to get it out. So I'm not saying that you're never going to sneeze or anything like that, but I don't ever feel sick from allergies. You know, allergies oftentimes make people feel sick, or it's more than a couple of sneezes. Okay, good. I'm gone. It turns into like chronic congestion, chronic inflammation, all sorts of things that just cannot stop. They're just really, really, really elevated. And so those are the things that homeopathy can absolutely help with. so that you have, as you said, a more normal response to, okay, there's a little bit of stuff in the air, let's sneeze and get it out. And, yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
I'm over here knocking on wood for you, because that's what I used to say all the time is, I don't have any allergies. I'm totally fine. And then all of a sudden, as I get older, boom, allergies. But this is something I've experienced myself, mm-hmm. is in like real, for some reason it, with me, it's ragweed. When ragweed gets really high, I feel like I have the flu. Let me rephrase that. I used to feel like I had the flu. I would be super tired, wouldn't be able to do anything. I would literally feel horrible, my whole body. And it didn't feel like allergies. It was so bad. But this is something that over time, as I have done homeopathy, has it improved and gotten better. And now I have, you know, a little bit of congestion in my head. And I feel maybe a little bit more tired than normal, but it's super livable now. Like I can do life like normal. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to have my immune system chilled out, not like completely freaking out with any amount of ragweed.
Yeah. And I'm not worried about, like, I don't need to knock wood, because if something were to happen and I suddenly become an allergic person, then I know homeopathy is going to help it. And I'm going to jump in right away to get that taken care of. I want to touch really quickly on skin, like contact allergies, the atopic dermatitis, because this is something that does take longer to recover. You've got the advantage that usually with contact allergies, once you have them identified, that you can hopefully avoid them for a while and have a bit of the control that is allowed in food allergies, where you can have more strict avoidance for something that you know is an allergy or sensitivity. That said, atopic dermatitis or eczema is rarely just a contact thing. It's, you know, it's the allergic triad, right? It's the asthma, the allergies, and the atopic dermatitis. And so a lot of times there is more systemic things that are contributing to it. And so while you can have the contact avoidance, there's probably other things that are a factor in just the overall inflammatory state. And the skin is one of the ways that our body tries to get things out when it's not, when it's not good for us, right? It's one of our detox organs. It's a really vital thing for our body to be able to do. And skin stuff tends to heal last. Sometimes the things that will come out through the skin, and so not necessarily in some of the ways that people think about it, like that it's a detox reaction, though that is something that can happen. But we'll sometimes just see that the body, as it heals, that it's healing from the inside out, and the skin is almost always the last thing to heal. And so this is one that's going to be a more stubborn symptom, and it's not going to be dramatic changes. It's going to be mild changes that over a period of months that you're like, oh yeah, that's not bothering me so much anymore. Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that, you know, eventually getting to that place. Or I went from being so itchy, I was scratching until I bleed every night, to being, I'm still really itchy, but I'm not bleeding anymore, to being, now I'm really only itchy in bed. And now I am just randomly itchy sometimes, but it's not like I'm having to scratch, 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 scratch forever. And like, I haven't even thought about it for a while. It's going to be like a slow and steady wins the race for skin stuff. And there's probably going to be multifactorial things going in, not just like a specific single contact allergy. All right. One more thing that I need to talk about, and then we'll like wrap up with how things are for you now and any advice or that you want to share with parents who might be going to navigate some of these things, or final thoughts that you have written down that I've managed to somehow skip over the right place to say them. I want to talk a little bit about the state that you're in right now, where you are having, there's still some regular, frequent, uncontrollable inhalant exposures that you're having to deal with. And then there's the food indiscretions. And then there's the, you know, where she will sometimes get to the place that she's doing well enough on a remedy and just, or had a bad enough reaction that she can actually, that she's doing well enough that she can connect to the food, that she can make the decision. But willpower is not the answer for anything in life. Willpower will fail us when we are not doing well. We have to be like our absolute best all the time for willpower to be effective. So it's not a solution. Willpower is not a solution for things. We have to have a really strong understanding. And at her age, you know, she's a tween right now. Is she a teenager? 13. Okay, so she's a baby teenager right now. I knew, I was like, oh, I was right there. So she's in that place that peer pressure is so much stronger than willpower. Even when you've got a, like, you have to have a really strong motivation to have that strength and conviction of yourself that many adults don't have, let alone a teenager, a tween, a teen, anything, or a young adult. And so what you're going to end up in and what you are dealing with is that you've got some amount of constant exposure that is unavoidable. And then you've got this other part that is technically avoidable, but that is just not really being consistently avoided and that you can't rely on being consistently avoided. And so in the homeopathy recovery right now and what you're trying to deal with is you're getting whiplash left and right. And it's hard to figure out what's going on because you don't have anything that's consistent. So it's, is it the remedy that's helping or is it the avoiding the food that's helping? Is she aggravating or did she eat a food that she wasn't supposed to eat? Like, you know, all of these things where there's the inconsistency or she's doing great for a period of time, but what was it that was doing it and how is she going to handle the next thing? And not having any sort of structure to it can make it really maddening for everybody to try and figure out what's going on. And, you know, depending on how stubborn the kid is, that this is the point where you're going to also start to have them resisting treatment and saying, this isn't working. I don't want to do this. This is stupid. Or nobody else does this. I don't want to do this. Why, you know, all the things, the resistance is going to start to come more profoundly. I have been trying to talk you into a summer free-for-all. And I realize that I'm doing this to you and to your provider because I'm not taking care of your kids anymore because we talked about that on other episodes, but I'm not doing it anymore because Jody and I just, we needed to have separation so that she could have somebody who was more detached than I was able to be from her kids. And so I realize that I'm recommending this, not being the person who has to deal with the consequences of it. And as hard as I think it would be, you're probably more likely to get progress if you have a summer free-for-all where there's just no changes, no like restriction, allowance, because that gets confusing to the body. It gets confusing to the remedy. It just makes it really hard to understand things. So that's just something that I'm recommending to you. And I know that you've got mixed feelings about it, that you understand it in theory and you're concerned about the chaos that would ensue and the challenges and the ways that would potentially impact your life when she's not doing so well. That's one of those things that like is the short-term difficulty worth evening things out. And of course, there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees with anything in health, but yeah. This is something that you personally might need to consider and other parents in a similar situation might need to consider as well.
Yeah.
Because when you get to that place that you have less control and you've got so much of the whiplash, it can just get quite confusing and create a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I've been in a constant since the end of the last school year was when she started sampling foods. It's been like I feel like that of the handful of things that I am good at in life, I feel like I'm good at doing homeopathy. I'm good at recognizing shifts. I'm good at, and really this is because you and her current provider are so good at also leading me, but I'm like, this is the one thing that I can do this. I know I can do this and I can do it well enough to get a child recovered. And it has been like, I'm not a crying person. I have been in tears so many times since the end of the last school year, because I cannot figure anything out. And there's no way, this is what I understand about what you're saying. And it's not just you saying it, it's also her current provider, because before you and I had that conversation, her current provider told me if there was anything that we could do, we would consistently trial foods on her. So y'all are thinking the same way. It's like, it scares me. And I don't think we can, I don't think it's safe to do the summer of whatever. Like eat whatever you want. But I do think that it's time for some very, very consistent food challenges. I think that it's time that we are we push harder, we allow more symptoms, and we use those symptoms to guide her homeopathic healing. Like, because it's never going to happen the way it is right now. Like, this is such chaos that I can't figure anything out. And it's just, it's a tremendous amount of frustration. And really like, she, at the beginning of the year, she's like, I'm locking in. I'm not eating anything else. I get it. It's like impacting so much. So we are in this space right now where I am back to, I'm like, oh, okay. So I can do this. Like, this is easy right now. She's still got
stuff. So she's been good. She's been good.
Oh, yeah. She's done it. Yeah, she's done it. She's doing really, really good. And it's much easier right now. And everything kind of comes down. But as everything has come down, that there's less symptoms, that ADHD, the tics, the behaviors, the all of the things that she's experiencing. And the thing is like what you and her current provider are saying, I'm okay with now because homeopathy has gotten rid of all the big, bad, dangerous things. The symptoms that she's experiencing are just problematic in parenting and school and all of that stuff. And I feel like for some silly reason that I have to go through one of everything with homeopathy in order to be able to talk about one of everything. So I think this is our next one of everything is that, you know, when we are to a place where school isn't a factor and we're in summer and like, I think we just have to let it rip. And I think we just have to sit in those symptoms and let them be what they are for a while in order to help. Because what I know, like my logic mind knows, also from experience, because we've done this before, I know that doing that will get her over the hump. And that's what it's going to take to push her healing forward. Like we're stuck at the space right now. And I don't have the fears that I used to have about her, you know, going to the hospital or having breathing problems or anything like that. It's just like a, oh, it's such a PTSD thing too at the same time. Yeah.
All right. So in short summary, food sensitivities, the avoidance can work for a period of time, obviously, until you, unless you're rapidly approaching the place where your control is going to be substantially less. And especially if you're dealing with something like MCAS, where you've got a very limited number of safe foods, the earlier you can start, the better you're going to be able to get into a place that you can have confidence and safety with eating, like having your child have access to foods when you're not around and having challenges with willpower. Environmental allergies or things that you don't have as much control over, you're going to see more of like a slow progress and potentially that pendulum swing with a more appropriate immune response, but overactive immune response. It's going to be like a more slow and steady. Allergies are going to be there for a while. They're going to be contributing to PANS flares, then a big allergy season, then a less big allergy season, and then ideally get to like a minimal to no allergy type of response. But it's going to take some time because when we're dealing with something that we're going to have constant repeated exposure to, we're not going to see it just go away if we're still having the atypical immune response and still have all the cells and things in our bodies, like the antibodies in our bodies, not technically the cell. Anyway, we still have the antibodies there that are the guards at the door that are ready to fight. And so it's a process, but you can get there with patience and persistence and calculated exposure to the things that you know are problematic or triggers or sensitivities. And again, as always, if there's anything anaphylactic, proceed with the highest caution with a clear plan for how to handle it. If you are sampling any reintroductions, that you and your allergist have a clear rescue plan for. Don't count on homeopathy to be your rescue plan in these cases, because we have to have the right fit and it has to be ready for the body to respond at its own pace. It can. Homeopathy can, in some cases, if you got the right fit, but you don't want to be the one who finds out it wasn't the right fit on the way to the hospital, right? So you need to have a rescue plan that is not only homeopathy and that has some biochemical force should you need it to intervene quickly. Sure. Any final thoughts or any other big things? I mean, we already gave the spoiler alert. Avery can eat whatever she wants now. No reactions. Mm-hmm. Gwen is still reacting to things, but substantially less so because where she was at in the beginning was homebound. She could not leave, like couldn't even go outside sometimes because of she needed the filtration system for like the air in your house. So still struggling with food and environmental reactivity, but substantially better than she was before because she's out and about in the girls' locker rooms, playing volleyball, doing all the things, living her best life, and still having some reactions that will eventually get managed when you can be a little bit more, hopefully get to a point that you can be a little bit more aggressive with those things.
Yeah. I'm just going to say the same thing that I said earlier is, in case no one has ever told you, we do have the ability to change what's going on inside our children's bodies. We do have the ability to help their immune systems function better in order to have it not see these things as threats and not start attacking the body. And I think there's so many people that just don't understand this. I think it's a hard thing to wrap our brain around, but it's possible.
All right. I think that's really all we had for today. That's a great place to end, to just know that it is possible. We can do this. You don't have to be an allergic person forever. This is something that can adjust and change with patience and persistence and the right homeopathic remedies and the right management of what you're seeing. So hang in there. And I think that's it for today. All right. We'll be back soon, guys. Take care.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.